Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
New CBS Sunday.
You collect rewards, right?
This is how I make my living.
When something is lost,
everyone's looking for something.
He finds it.
You strong swimmer?
So-so.
So-so. So-so's okay.
Justin Hartley stars.
How you survive, you make quick, smart decisions, and you never let panic take the wheel.
Sounds cool.
It is cool, actually. Very cool.
Tracker. New Sunday on CBS and streaming on Paramount+.
The wait is over. The Chi returns with new episodes on Paramount+.
I rule the world.
What brings you to the Chi?
Opportunity.
Everybody get down!
Walk right up to the sun.
A new rain is coming to the South Side.
Never should have sent a boy to do a woman's job.
The Chi. New episodes May 10th. Visit ParamountPlus.com/The Chi to get a 50% discount off the Paramount Plus with Showtime annual plan. Offer ends July 14th. Subscription auto renews. Restrictions apply.
Welcome in to another episode of the Yachts and Audibles podcast. Eric Scopel, Jared Mack here on another Friday morning. We've now had about two practices this spring in the month of April. To recap, we've learned some things. We had our preview podcast on Monday. We had some questions that maybe have had an answer or two, but maybe not have total clarity on much of anything at this point, if we're being totally honest. A couple fully padded practices, so that's always fun to see. Allowed the guys to kind of go out there and really challenge each other. I'm sure when you have now 31 newcomers, it's a good place to start. And just in terms of assessing what you have on this roster, they had obviously 28 in March. And we should note Oregon has since added Jabbar Muhammad and Evan Stewart, which we hinted at on Monday. And then also Trent Ferguson, an in-state offensive lineman from Salem, has joined the mix as well. As Dan said on Tuesday, anyone not here, you should be expected to join the team in the summer. But first off, Jared, let's start with who am I recording with today? Is this Jared or Matt? This is Jared.
Know. Could be either of us. Who knows?
Who knows? Let's start with some of the Carlos Laughlin stuff, because we teased on Monday's show that we would get into some of this. We do have some answers. I think there's still a lot to be determined here with what's going to happen long term, obviously. But Dan Lanning spoke on Tuesday following the first practice back after a 2-week break, and had a lot of things to say on the Carlos Laughlin topic, I think we should say. I think he did a good job of kind of straddling that line of making sure to credit the work that Carlos Laughlin did while he was here, and the efforts he made, that those have not gone, unappreciated on his from his perspective. But he also acknowledged the timing of this, not great. I think he called it interesting, which is one way of putting it. And he also said kind of there is a plan for the interim. They're going to, it sounds like, be kind of a coaching by committee operation here at running back, where you'll have Ko Akai, who is Oregon fans might know that name. He played tight end and I think defensive end right around when Marcus Mariota was here, another Hawaii guy. He has been with the team for, I think, 2 or 3 years as a grad assistant. He will be a part of that. And then Jack Smith, I think, is an offensive analyst who will also be kind of spearheading that. But it sounds like it's going to be a bunch of different dudes helping lead this room in the interim. And we should note, Dan also said, like, we feel like we've got a kind of a well-oiled machine right now, and we're willing to just kind of play out spring without our full-time running backs coach. Like, he made it pretty clear we're not trying to rush into a hire or anything. So I think I wouldn't be surprised if someone gets hired this month, but Dan made it pretty clear, like, hey, we're open to going through all of April with kind of this operation, which does not include a full-time replacement for Carlos Laughlin.
Yeah, and I talked about that on Monday. It's like, if they find a guy that they're going to hire that they really like, sure, it'll come within the end of spring ball. But I think they've always taken their time, and I think that's what they're going to do again. And that's basically what Dan said. He said, the urgency is getting it right. There you go. So it's not going to happen like in the next week, I don't think, unless they really find somebody that they really like and they want to hire him. But they're going to take their time and try to get it as right as possible. I thought Dan's comments on Carlos leaving were very politician. Like, he was great. We can do better. We're a great program. Like, we can get somebody who's just as good. Like, a little shade, but not a lot of shade. But maybe the average person will read that and wouldn't think there's any shade at all. So very politician from Dan about what I expected. And I think it'll be interesting to see, like, I guess the running back like coaching committee. I think it's spring ball. Like, you know, you're going to have DeJuan Riggs coming in the summer. So everybody who is in the running back room is a running back, or like Jay Harris is the only real newcomer who needs to understand, you know, what's going on at Oregon football. And at this point, I don't think you're getting too nitty gritty with what you're doing. You're certainly learning the playbook and things like that. But I think like for fall camp, I think it would be way more important to have a full-time running back coach than it is in the first week of April. So I think it'll be all right, but I thought Dan's comments were a little interesting. I thought there was a little bit of shade thrown, but especially when he's like, the timing was interesting. So it certainly was interesting.
The other comment that was, I don't know if it's shade throwing, but he did say he was a relatively unknown coach when he arrived.
Yeah, I thought that was interesting too. It's kind of like bragging. He's like, well, he was a nobody when we found him, and now he's Ohio State's running back. So that was also, I heard that and my ears kind of perked up.
It's kind of like what he does quite frequently, which is he tries to turn it into a positive of saying like, hey, we've done it before. We've got the ability to do it again. And as he said right after that, I'll just read more of this quote. And this is a great opportunity. Transitions give you an opportunity to get better. So that's our goal. We're going to get better. We're going to bring someone in who can do a really good job with the organization. So you've got that going. And then in terms of the timeline, there are several questions asked about it. And as we said before, pretty clear they're willing to go maybe into May or whatnot to find this. But he did also say something along the lines of, we're always prepared. We have contingency plans and we already had kind of a list of candidates or names that we would know. So it's possible that they could turn this around short, quicker than slower, but we'll see what happens. I mean, I haven't heard like, hey, expect to hear something in the next week, et cetera, et cetera. With the running back room right now, I think everybody intends to be here. I think we've seen a couple of people. I just wanted to address this because we've seen people ask it. All the running backs have been at Thursday's practice. They were all at Tuesday's practice. I know there's a concern when a position coach leaves. I brought it up with Demetrius Martin, like, hey, Nico Reed basically came to Oregon because of Demetrius Martin. He went to Colorado first, then he followed him to Oregon. Maybe he'd follow him to Michigan State. That has not happened yet. And it seems that that won't be the case at running back either. I wouldn't be, I guess, totally shocked or stunned if one of these guys that Coach Lachlan recruited follows him to Ohio State at some point. But everybody's still at practice doing their thing. And that's right there's pretty good news, because I know there's always concern about departures when a coach does leave, like Carlos did, especially with the kind of strange timing of it all. So
I mean, we talked about this on Monday too. It's like, if you're Jordan James and you go to Ohio State's running back room, like, great, you're gonna be the third string running back. You're gonna be behind Judkins and behind Travion Henderson. Like, there's no reason for these guys to go. And if you're Noah Whittington, again, yeah, no, great, you're the third string running back instead of the second string running back. Or not, like, I guess Noah Whittington is competing for a starting spot here, even though I think Jordan James is the clear number one, but he's still out there on the field competing. That wouldn't really be the case at Ohio State. And it's also his last year of college eligibility. So, like, you really want to transfer once again? Like, I think if you're concerned about who potentially could transfer, it's the younger guys. It's a guy like Jaylen Lamar. It's a guy like DeJuan Riggs, who I just mentioned, who have years of eligibility, who were recruited by Carlos Lachlan. But if you look at Lamar, he's from Washington. Like, there's a connection there. It's not the East Coast connection. And Riggs hasn't even arrived on campus yet. So I'd be surprised. Again, anything can happen. It's a transfer portal era. Jordan James could be gone tomorrow, but I'd be very surprised if he were.
One thing I know, Whittington, because I thought he was a senior too, but I had my roster right in front of me. I looked down at it. He's listed as a redshirt junior. So I wonder if they froze his eligibility clock last year because he was hurt. That's something to I'll have to ask him.
And he only played in four games.
Yeah, so maybe that's what I don't know. I just noticed it right now as you said it because I was like, yeah, he's a senior, and then it said he's a redshirt junior. So maybe he has 2 years. And we maybe should note with no. maybe I don't know who knows. Yeah, maybe that's the reason he leaves now. Well, and actually, that kind of is a nice transition point here from the running back room. Unless you had any kind of final thoughts on Lachlan, on candidates, I don't really either. We'll keep you up, everybody updated here. We'll have a running back big board up, I think, sometime probably this weekend. Now that news is finalized, just with some names to know. And of course, we know from past experience, Dan oftentimes hires people that you just have, you would have no idea of, like, this person is somehow a candidate. So we will see what happens there. But the Noah Whittington part, I think, is a good transition because two fully padded practices this week. Noah was in pads at both practices. I couldn't tell you everything he did, to be honest with you, Jared, because we watched so little of the practice, but seems like he's like logging close to a full workload, at least when we're watching, which is super encouraging. In general, I think the availability of players has been encouraging. I think the only player we know for sure is out, well, a couple of the true freshmen we assume probably are, AJ Pugliano being one of them, but Jaleel Florence, I think we got a little bit of an update. He has not practiced Tuesday or Thursday or the March practices. I don't think this is a huge surprise for people who pay attention closely. He was rather dinged up to end last season, did not play, I think, in the bowl game, the Pac-12 championship game, and maybe the Oregon State game. I think he missed like either last
– did not play in the Oregon State game.
Okay, so I think he missed the last 3 weeks or so of the season. And it sounds like, though, he might be able to participate a little bit here, Jared, at the end of spring.
Yeah, it was a good update from Chris Hampton on Thursday. He said, I'll give you the full quote here. We may get some out of him, meaning Florence, later on in the spring. He's out there now. He's doing some walkthrough stuff with us, but that's about it right now. But I think the rehab is going pretty good. And after talking to Chief and talking to Jaleel, he's in a much better space than he was about a month ago. So I expect we may be able to get some out of him in the spring. Encouraging. He clearly had a lower leg injury. It happened against Arizona State. I remember being in Tempe and watching that game and seeing Jaleel Florence go like for the opening kickoff in the second half and then kind of limp towards the sideline. I'm like, oh, that's not great after playing the first half. And then lo and behold, next week against Oregon State, he was on crutches. And then I don't remember when it was, probably in December, he posted on social media that like, you know, his leg was like in a cast that he clearly just got surgery on. So
yeah,
that was a pretty good indication of what was happening at that time period. So, and we saw him around the facilities with a leg brace on. So another clear indicator of what was going on, but it seems like he's doing well. He's making good improvements. It's kind of the same thing with Noah Whittington. Like, I don't know where he is, like a percent wise. And I don't know if we will find that out during the spring. I think it'd be really encouraging if he did suit up for practice. And it kind of goes to my point about the running back room where it's spring ball. It's not as intense as it is during fall ball. Like they could get him out there. They could throw him in a red non-contact jersey, just like they did with a couple cats during the March practices and just see how he feels physically, cutting, running, you know, doing football things. So I think it's certainly positive news. I think that was one of the biggest concerns, for Oregon going forward into the 2024 season was what's the cornerback room rotation going to look like and will Jaleel Florence be healthy enough to impact that? I think the signs are pointing towards yes, he will be healthy enough to impact that, but you know, it's all going to be just how his body responds to, you know, the ramp up and being able to do things over the next couple of weeks. So all in all, I think it was a positive thing. I'm surprised Chris Hampton told us. I think that was maybe the most surprising thing out of all of this is he was very, very candid with what he told us. So always appreciate that. But yeah, no, I think all in all, I think it was a good response and a good update.
And to your point about it being surprising, I agree because in theory, most programs have like a head coach is the only one to discuss injuries or those sort of situations from like a personnel perspective. So to have Hampton offer that update and not just defer and say, oh, I'll let Dan provide the, I think James asked the question of like, hey, is it possible if Florence does anything? Mm-hmm. I would have anticipated, or I kind of anticipated, he would have been like, oh, that's up to coach. Jill is doing well, but that, I'll let coach provide the update as opposed to him providing. So I don't know. I thought that was kind of notable, but it was a good update. And to your point, I think you feel encouraged that he'll be at least by fall camp, somebody who is hopefully ready to go. And that's several months away from now. And then the start of the season,
right,
available to start, but you never know with these things. And it takes one flare up or one, you know, re-aggravation of the injury. And we're looking at another, a totally different window where he misses time. And he did have a very strong season in 23 when he was healthy, but it wasn't always the case. I mean, we had that leg injury, but I think he also dealt with like a shoulder injury or something suffered earlier in the year.
Yeah. So, I mean, he left the game against Washington. I think he left the game against somebody else, if my memory serves me correct.
I think Cal was one of the games he left. Yeah.
Yeah. There were always little injuries here and there for him. So I think, you know, getting healthy is going to be a huge part of his development, his prospectus in the future. Like, it's going to be important, obviously, going into this year, but you know, he's going to deal with these nagging injuries eventually at one point.
And then two other Ducks who are not at practice, but not due to injury, but because they're playing other sports. Bryce Betcher, kind of focusing on baseball right now. Jared, I'll let you kind of maybe speak to some of Bryce's baseball exploits, because why not provide a mini baseball update and maybe kind of what his plan is. And then Rod Pleasant, who was one of the top sprinters in the 2023 prep sprinting class, is focused on track and field. And I don't know if we'll see him really at all in spring. I think he is dialed in to trying to run as close to 10 second in the 100 meters, which he is very capable of doing. I think his PR is like 10:09 or 10:07 or something absurd. So no Rod, no Bryce. Jared, do you know like roughly what Bryce is thinking for football? Like, is he going to keep playing, or is he just focused on baseball in the spring?
Yeah. So I asked him pre-baseball season, I think it was. And it seemed like it was going to go half and half. I think I even asked Waz, and he's like, yeah, no, we're going to have him out here. Dan's going to have him out there. And it's going to be a great relationship. And then he went into like this really detailed relationship about him and Dan. It was fun. But I originally anticipated it would be similar to what we saw last season, where it was kind of like a real 50-50. The difference this year is that Bryce is good and is the everyday starting center fielder and has been for the better part of the entire season. I don't, like, other than like a day off, like a rest day, and when he was injured, like, I don't think Bryce has been out of the lineup at all. He's also hitting 320. He's getting on base a lot. Like, he's playing a really good defensive center field. So I don't think the football program needs Bryce as much as the baseball program needs Bryce. So I think that's going to make the final decision. And like last year, it was really 50-50 because you know, Oregon had a lot of outfielders, you know, Tanner Smith and Colby Shade and Riku Nishida. Like, they weren't, Bryce Butcher was not playing other than a defensive replacement. So during the day, yeah, no, go play football. But, you know, he's down in Los Angeles tonight preparing for the series against UCLA. Like, he's not going to be at football tomorrow. Like, he might have been a season ago. So I think that's pretty obvious, at least at this point. And for Roderick, I have no idea how he's doing, but that's going to be a decision he's going to have to make one day. And I'll be interested to see what it is, whether he tries to go full-time track or full-time football. But I think regardless, I think he'll be really good at one of the two.
Yeah, he's the closest thing to a Devin Allen we've seen at Oregon since, in terms of being somebody who's legitimately has professional track and professional football aspirations. And, you know, the football part I think is maybe less clear just because it's somewhat a little bit more competitive, and there's certainly a lot more corners that he'll have to compete with to make a football roster in the NFL. But from a track perspective, this kid can run sub 10, which he seems like he's well on his way of doing. Like, that's going to be a hard thing to not devote your attention to. Like, representing your country in the Olympics is something that maybe he's capable of doing if he's able to run sub 10, you know? I mean, those are the sort of times you're looking at. So I think this will be maybe a really telling spring for him in terms of how he performs on the track. I think he's run twice or once. They've had a couple of meets. I don't know what those times have been. Yeah, go ahead and see if you can find what he's run so far. But I'll be curious to see with him what, yeah, to your point, Jared, does he try to pull the Devin Allen and do both sports, which you could do? I mean, the fall, there's no conflicts really for track, but you are missing most of spring or probably all of spring just to focus on sprinting. Is that going to put him behind the eight ball, as so to speak, with football? Is that going to make it difficult for him to really actually progress and get better? Because these are pivotal months, especially for a young corner to miss. I just think it's going to be really interesting to see kind of what decision he ultimately winds up making. But a really talented football player who I think everybody was encouraged by when we saw him in limited snaps last year. But the other part is Oregon's, and we can maybe transition over to the next bit here in a second, talking about the defensive back room. But Jared, any luck? What do you got?
Yeah. Rod has only run the 60-meter dash this year. He's run it three times. And his career best looks like it's a 6.69 in the New Mexico Don Kirby Invitational, for those who are familiar. I'm not sure where that ranks. He came in fourth place. The fastest was 6.54. So he's a little bit away, but again, true freshman. So we'll see.
That's not an absolute blazing time. That's like, if you want to be running like sub 6.4, if you're like super, super fast, I think in the 60, from my experience. I've watched a lot more outdoor track than the indoor, where they run the 60.
Yeah, so. The 60 always seems silly to me, but I don't make the rules.
You don't make the rules. I'm trying to think. There's one other thing I wanted to bring up on the availability front before we move on to some news on the defensive back room, because we did speak with Chris Hampton and I think learned some kind of interesting things I find interesting. We'll see what the listeners think. But Jackson Jones, the outside linebacker, who according to Tosh Lupoy could be maybe an inside linebacker, was in uniform for both practices this week, which was new. He was not in March. And he did spend, I think, almost all of Thursday's practice working with some rehab guys there. So there's a high school injury he's working back from. I don't know if he's somebody who's going to make a huge impact this fall. I would guess not, but just wanted to kind of provide an update there since he's new on campus and we were able to see him. Is there anything else from the availability or what we've seen in practice? Or maybe we can just touch on that stuff at the end. I guess we could have some initial thoughts on Evan Stewart and Jabbar Muhammad, which I don't even know what we're basing that off of, other than like
right.
what they look They're like there. Walking in. Yeah.
Yeah. No, I don't have, I mean, other than like Gage Hurick being a punter listed as a kicker on the roster, but yeah. nobody cares about that. So.
All right. Let's move on to the more concrete information from Coach Hampton. And then at the end, we'll maybe do like just like a back and forth on here are some small nuggets we learned that are potentially interesting. So I did think this was kind of notable that Oregon has not had a strictly defensive backs coach. And what I mean by that is that they're coaching all the defensive back positions, I think, since John Neal. And that would have been back when Helfrich was here. So we're talking maybe close to a decade. They've almost always since, they have exclusively since split it up where you have a safeties coach and you have a corners coach. And that was the case last year where Chris Hampton was the safeties coach, Demetrius Martin was the corners coach. And with Demetrius leaving, they've decided to go to a one defensive back coach, situation. They've elevated Brian Michalowski to coach inside linebackers, which did not have a designated assistant coach previously under Coach Lanning. And so the staff structure on defense is significantly different than it was a year ago. And we talked to Coach Hampton about that and kind of what their approach is. And I'll run through this pretty quick, but you know, he and Rashad Wadud, who is basically the team's corners coach, despite being a grad assistant or an analyst. I don't actually know. I get confused on whose titles are what, basically, with these analysts and grad assistants. Yeah. They feel kind of interchangeable to me. I know they aren't. But Rashad's one of those. And then Antonio Parks and Connor Boyd, according to Coach Hampton, are also helping with the safety. So there's four guys in that meeting room, which is important because there's like probably 20-plus guys in that room from a player perspective. That room is including all the safeties, all the corners, and all of the stars, which is kind of that hybrid position. So it's a different approach from what we've seen at Oregon recently. It is nothing new, though, to Coach Hampton, which is the part I wanted to get into. I thought was sort of interesting, which is that he has basically operated from this kind of situation exclusively throughout his career. He said He did this at McNeese State. He did this at Tulane, both as a position coach and then even when he was the full-time defensive coordinator. I asked him if this was his preference, and he said, quote, "Yes, if you ask me honestly, this would be my preference. You could do it both ways. I've done it both. But if you ask me preferably, I'd rather do it this way." So we're actually maybe in a situation that will benefit the defensive back room more than the setup was last year, just because if Coach Hampton, if this is the way Coach Hampton likes to operate, then maybe it's a good thing that this is the way it's working out. So again, I know this is like kind of inside baseball stuff here where we're talking about meeting rooms, which maybe fans don't really care about, but I did think it was kind of interesting that this is the way that they're operating. You know, typically in the past, you'd have your corners in one room and you'd have your safeties in one room, and maybe you'd have your stars with both or in one room on their own. But now we've got one room with probably, again, 20, 25 players led by basically one full-time on-field assistant in Chris Hampton. So a lot of responsibility there for him. But as he said, this is the way he kind of likes to operate. And I'm really excited to see how all this comes together for him, because as we've said here, maybe not enough. I think he's absolutely one of the rising stars on this staff. And when we talk about coaches who would be attractive to be hired elsewhere, similar to Coach Lachlan, Hampton's right at the top of that list as somebody who would be either a full-time defensive coordinator or shoot, maybe at a smaller school, somebody who could be a head coach. Cause I just think, I think very highly of the way he operates and carries his business, and Dan seems to feel the same way.
And his paychecks say the same thing. That's why he's paid over $1 million a year to keep him as the co-defensive coordinator. Yeah, I mean, I too, if I were Chris Hampton, would like the complete control of everything that goes on in the secondary room. So I think that's certainly why he likes it. I can see why just having like almost kind of less guys, but like you said, there's still like three or four assistant coaches who are on this with Hampton and Wadu, but it's still like having less coaches have, it's going to sound weird, less of a say, I'm sure certainly helps, where he can kind of control what he wants. And he's a really good defensive mind. You can go back to his Tulane numbers. And when he took over as defensive coordinator, that pass defense got way better, just increasingly better across the board. And the same thing with Oregon. You know, he comes on last year for his first full season, and Oregon's secondary does a lot better, and that could be because of improved talent across the board, which certainly helps, but scheme, just schematics in general, philosophy, just the teaching on the field. There's a lot of changes that he brought, and I'm interested to see what are more of those changes. But I agree with you, Eric. Like, he's certainly a rising star, and he made a really interesting decision to go from Tulane's DC to be the safeties coach here. But now he's co-defensive coordinator. Now he's making over $1 million a year. So I think he's certainly a rising star. And I think any like mid-major school would be, you know, high on his tail and trying to hire him as a head coach. But if you're Oregon, you want to keep him around as long as possible. So we'll see where that ends, but that's obviously, you know, a topic for potentially a much different day. For spring camp, I'm excited to see what he does, and especially with the plethora of talent. Like, I wrote about Oregon cross training and how he was like, "Oh, the new guys will learn eventually. Old guys, they know now." So it's like, all right, cool. It's not a lot of information, but in the exercise, I did go through like the cornerback and the safety room. There's a lot of talent in there, and it's just getting almost better by the year in terms of who they're bringing in for recruits. And this 2024 class was uber talented after getting the 2023 class with Roderick Pleasant, Dalen Austin, a couple other guys, where a lot of us thought that was pretty darn talented. So, and then obviously landing Muhammad and Cam Alexander, like they're that safety room, that cornerback room, star room, like there's a lot of talent in there. And I'm very interested to see what Chris Hampton does along with Rashad Wadu of like how they balance that out, how they get as many dudes onto the field as possible who are talented. They're just going to have talent at their fingertips whenever they want. So interesting room, interesting dynamic, but excited to see where it goes.
And we were supposed to get, we should note, Tysheem Johnson right after Chris Hampton. And I would have just been curious to hear from a defensive back, like what that difference has meant. Maybe not specifically for him, because he was probably working in that same room. Maybe a corner would have been someone who'd been fun to talk to. We'll get that later this spring, but just to get a feel for what this is going to be like going forward. And hey, Jared, maybe at some point in the summer, like in July, when there's not a whole lot to talk about, we'll do like a draft of Oregon's assistant coaches and who would be the most attractive to be hired away from another school. Because I would probably have Hampton in that top tier of guys.
Yeah, no, we'll make a graphic and send it out to all the universities as well. Just be like, hey, guys, this is what we think. We're interested to see what you think, who you would hire.
See if we get commission out of it. Yeah, see if we get some commission on there.
Finder's fee. Yeah.
Yeah. We told you this guy was great. Now you hired him, and you hired him for $1.5 million. We deserve 3% of that paycheck.
Yes, please.
I don't have a whole lot else on the defensive back kind of setup. I did think he was really high on all of the portal additions. I think Kobe Savage was the one we probably asked him the least about, but we did ask about Jabbar. We did ask about Cam Alexander. Both of those players, he has a lot of nice things to say. I mean, I think Alexander, the key was just the speed and the change. He talked a lot about change of direction and that its importance there. I mean, that was something he highlighted with Cam Alexander. With Jabbar, it was really talented and one heck of a competitor. Like, you know, he said that when they spoke to his high school coaches, his coaches at Oklahoma State, his coaches at Washington, I did think it was interesting that they talked to people at Washington about this, because I'm sure this was probably not where Washington's coaching staff wanted him to go, but they had some conversations, it sounds like, and everybody just loved the way he competes and the effort he puts in and how hard of a worker he is. And you do get a sense of like just how Coach Hampton talks about different players. I got the sense that they're really excited about Jabbar. And I can't really blame him for being, I mean, the player we saw on the field in the two games against Oregon last year in particular was a really, really good player. And at times, one of the best players on a field, which included a ton of offensive talent for Oregon and a ton of defensive talent for Washington. So this is a player to be really excited about. Let's just kind of spitball a couple of things maybe we've heard or seen. I think I'll start with, I guess it was funny how Tez Johnson described Evan Stewart. This is like, Well, it was funny how Tez Johnson described everybody physically, to be honest, because he said Evan Stewart was short and Jeremiah McClellan was chubby, which he then backed off and said, I think he said like thick or something like that. Cause I think I've seen Jeremiah McClellan. He is a broader person. I don't think he's like has a belly or anything. I don't think he's kidding. Yeah, he's not carrying.
Chubby.
Yeah. Like I know what chubby looks like. I look in the mirror. I see him. I'm like, that guy's got abs. I think we're a different types of body types, Tez. But, I just thought that was kind of funny from a Tez perspective, what he saw with Evan Stewart. We have seen so little of Evan Stewart that I don't really even have an evaluation. Like the extent of what I've watched is him return a couple of punts with no coverage team, we should note. And he caught the football and he looked explosive running with the football. So good early assessments, but that's really all I've got. I have even less probably on Jabbar, who I've like watched do some, I don't know, like try to force a fumble drills, but that's
some punch out drills. Like that's it.
So I don't have a ton. I wish we could be like, and then Evan and Jabbar were going one on one, and we watched he crushed him with his post corner route, and we don't have that kind of stuff from that perspective. But I couldn't help but chuckle at how Tez was describing his fellow receivers. He was very high on Evan's talent as well, but aside from maybe suggesting he's shorter than he thought he would be. So that was interesting. Josh Connerly was pretty dang high on Jaquan McRoy's physical tools, and just like he kind of compared him to what he was when he was a true freshman a couple of years ago, of needing time to learn everything, but just physically you saw, like, even in practice, I think he said he could pick a specific moment, but just like, yeah, there's some stuff he does where you go, okay, that's different. He's just a big, big kid. And his kind of eyes lit up. I always kind of look at the way that they, I guess, received the question. You could tell when he heard that name, he was like, yeah, that's been a guy who's kind of stood out to me as well. I'm trying to think if there's anything else from the players, because frankly, the players' assessments are going to be a lot more interesting than ours, because it's just going to be being like, yeah, Jericho Johnson is a really big person and Amari Washington also looks really big. So that's good. What is there anything else, Jared, that stood out from any of that? Oh, I guess one thing, Jared, was that that we, I guess we got kind of a sense of the place kicking hierarchy more than like, I guess. Yeah. Sort of.
Yeah, I guess. It was on a Tuesday. There was a fireman drill for Oregon where they go from one side of the field to the other. They're all running. Dan is screaming into the mic, counting down for 15 seconds. It's quite alarming if you're walking by. but it was Grant Meters who took the place kick and hit a field goal from probably 35 or 38 yards. But wasn't Atticus Sappington, contrary to reports, wasn't Andrew Boyle, wasn't anybody else. It was Grant Meters. So I thought that was certainly interesting. Do I know if that means anything? No. I'm sure the next time it'll be Atticus Sappington, but certainly interesting. I do like it. I do like to see Grant out there because he's like, he's the heir. He's the predecessor to Camden Lewis. So that's why they brought him on. But we'll see if that really sticks or makes a big difference. I'm trying to think if there's anything from the Tuesday player interviews where they kind of got into what one of the newcomers looked like, because that's always like the fun thing to do right about now.
T-Ferg said, and he's not a newcomer, but Kenyon Sadiq, he said he's like the fastest player on the field at all times, and there's some really fast guys here. So that was kind of one of those, oh, that's encouraging to hear a positive thing about Kenyon, who had some nice moments last year. Like notably, he caught Bo Nix's record-breaking touchdown pass in the bowl game, but he only played, I think we looked at it, he played like maybe he played like 80 snaps maybe, and like I think 20 of them came after non-conference play. So he really didn't play a lot towards the end of the season. So it was good to hear from Ferg that he's somebody that stood out. But I'm with you. Not a lot of stuff's jumping out here from a younger perspective.
Hampton was really high on Dalen Austin. So I thought that was interesting. I think it was Jared Denny of On3 who asked the Dalen Austin question. And Hampton said he's really, really fired up about his development and how he's getting better and better. So I like the idea of Dalen Austin as a corner because he's 6'2", he's like 200 pounds. There's a lot like I talked about, there's a lot of talent in that room, but I'm the highest on Dalen in terms of that 2023 class. And I think he's the guy who could really give some issues to, not issues, but really give the coaching staff some stuff to think about where he's going to play. Hampton also mentioned that he was playing star. So for anybody who was saying, hey, maybe he's playing free safety, he's not. He won't.
Sorry.
Yeah.
That was a suggestion that maybe he could play.
You were not the only person. Every time I would post the defensive two deep, someone would be like, oh, what about Dalen Austin at star? It's like, no, you don't move a 6'2" corner. So maybe they're going to move him to star. So we'll see. But I was encouraged to hear that from Hampton. Again, Gage Hurick is punting, which cool. And then the kick and punt returners are like the same every week. So if you read the practice report, there's no difference every week.
As you would say, that's a copy and paste probably for the list. I did have one thing maybe to wrap on that was interesting just from a defensive strategy perspective, maybe. I know we're way out. But, you know, James has now asked. It'd be weird if Dan was in the scrum asking questions. I'd appreciate that.
It would be interesting.
Our good friend James asked both Tosh Lupoi back in March and now Chris Hampton on Thursday about playing more dime, which would incorporate more of their cornerbacks. And when I think about this offseason and how aggressive they were in recruiting cornerbacks, especially when they returned Juliol, they returned Nico, they return Dante, they return Rod Pleasant and Dalen Austin. They bring in Sione Lalea, the top JUCO corner in the country. They bring in Dakota Fields, and Ife Obadegwu will join the team in the summer. That's a lot of highly regarded corners. But you think about the idea of maybe you're going to have a chance to get three or four of those guys on the field at times if you're playing certain personnel packages. And part of me, I know Hampton also said like we had issues with injuries last year. We wanted to kind of cover our bases a little bit more there because both Juliol and Kyrie were really in and out of the lineup the whole last 2 months or so of the season, I would say. I wouldn't be surprised if that's something to maybe keep an eye on. I don't know if we'll see it in the spring really at all, but when we get into the non-conference part of the season, of just like, maybe we're going to see a situation where you just are out there and you're going like, oh, Dante Manning is also out here, and so is Dalen Austin, along with starting corners Jaleel Florence and Jabbar Muhammad, or whatever it ends up being. Like, yeah. I could just see a scenario where they would want to take advantage of having all that depth at corner. And because frankly, like, I think they've got like four or five guys that I think are starting caliber corners on this roster. And you've got to find a way to get as many of those guys out there as possible. So that was something that kind of my ears perked on, or when Chris and Tosh talked about it.
Yeah, I always love a team that runs dime, but this feels like the wrong year to try to run it.
Just because of the conference. Yeah, maybe.
If they could have ran dime last year, that would have been sweet, because you're going against Michael Penix, you're going against Caleb Williams, you're going against all these great quarterbacks and a lot of spread offenses. But you know, a dime puts another defensive back on the field and takes out a linebacker. So that's why it's dime. You're just taking out a lot of beef, and you're putting in more secondary guys who, again, I think they're like Oregon's, my projected starting defensive backs are all good downhill hitters. Like, they can go get somebody in open space. But, you know, when you're going against Michigan or Ohio State or Michigan State, like, these are big boys who are going to probably try to establish a run, especially Jonathan Smith and Michigan State. So you're going to want all the beef out there that you can get. So again, it'll come in handy if it's a third down and long situation. If they can throw another defensive back, don't get me wrong, I'm all about it. But it just feels like their standard nickel look is more like what it's going to look like more often than not. I think dime is, yeah, it's more like a specialty package. So maybe I'm making too big of a deal out of it, but
yeah, I wasn't suggesting it's not going to be their base package. Just to
no,
be
no,
clear.
No.
That's not
I know that. I just feel like, it might be because of James. There's a lot of talk about it, and I'm like, I don't know how often they're going to put that in there, Jim. Like, it's going to be a real specialty package, and they pulled it off in 2022. And that was like the last time I really remember them running it a lot. And I don't anticipate them doing it as a base package in any real game. I think it's just going to be a specialty one, which is cool. It's fun. It's different, but it's not. I'll be excited to see it, but I'm not like, oh yeah, no, this is what they're going to run all the time. Don't expect that. If you're expecting them to run dime all the time, I wouldn't expect it.
No. I tend to agree with that. I just think from a personnel perspective, there are a lot of intriguing defensive backs, and to get as many of those guys out there as possible is exciting.
They have the ability to do it now.
They do. They have the ability to do it, and we'll see from a personnel perspective, we'll see when that actually comes to fruition, when that's of use. You make a good point in terms of the conference. There certainly aren't constructed that many offenses constructed the way they were in the Pac-12. I would imagine Washington, Jed Fish, that's going to be a game where, yeah, maybe that'll come in to play a little bit. UCLA, I don't actually know exactly what that offense is going to look like.
I have no idea.
Completely different leadership there. If Chip Kelly was still the coach, I'd say that could be a weekend where maybe you see a little bit of that. So, no, you bring up a good point in terms of this isn't something that is going to be used every week. But as you also kind of said, and the point we're kind of making is, they do have the players now, it sounds like, and they're going to experiment with using it a little bit. And we'll just have to see how frequent they go and turn to playing a little bit of dime. But when you have as many quality corners, and it kind of remains to be seen at safety, I think there is some value to mixing it up and putting more of those guys out there. Anything else from the first two practices of the second first week of spring?
No. No, I don't have anything.
All right. I don't really have anything either. We'll do another one of these podcasts sometime next week, recapping what the second week looks like. We'll also next week speak with more coaches. We should note we'll also be speaking with Junior Adams and some student athletes on Saturday morning. Next week, I'm guessing we'll probably get Dan and then maybe some more of the assistant coaches and student athletes. There was a whisper that Dylan Gabriel might be available at some point next week, which would be fun to talk to him about. We've got a couple of pieces of content on the site. His teammates and coaches seem to be very high on Dylan, but it'll be good to chat with him for the first time next week. But for Jared Mack, this has been Eric Scopel signing off from the Yachts and Audibles podcast. Talk to you later, folks.
Peace.
The baseball season is in full swing, which means you need to listen to Fantasy Baseball Today, part of the CBS Sports Podcast Network. Join Scott White, Chris Towers, and me, Frank Stample, every weekday as we recap every player from every game. We'll talk waiver wire ads, drops, players to trade for, prospects who could make an impact, and everything in between. Make sure to download and follow on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, the Odyssey app, and everywhere else podcasts are found.